Thanks for listening, Unplugged Army. I'm Louis Unga, General Manager at Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. We're proud to present Doug Fron's Unplugged.
Form an offense.
Everything you need to know in sports that affects Maricopa County, the state of Arizona, and the world, you get in 4 minutes. We start things off in Tempe, Arizona. The Arizona State Sun Devils have self-imposed a one-year bowl ban despite the fact that Tennessee just got hammered by the NCAA and the NCAA didn't take a bowl ban from them. Interesting. This is head coach Kenny Dillingham.
I was informed this morning at 6:30 a.m. I met with Ray Anderson and Gene Boyd.
Those are the athletic director and the assistant athletic director. The athletic department also issued a statement, but said they wouldn't be answering any questions. Yet they had no problem throwing the student athletes out there to answer questions. We call that cowardice. ASU takes on Southern Utah coming up Thursday, kickoff 7 o'clock. Diamondbacks, they took 2 out of 3 from the Reds over the weekend, 3 out of 4 in the series. They won Sunday 5-2. Corbin Carroll went 2-for-3 and stole his 40th base of the year. Slade Ciccone, the young pitcher, did not factor into the decision, but went 5 2/3 of an inning, giving up only 1 earned run. Manager, Torrey Lovello.
None of it happens without Slade. If Slade doesn't go out there and execute, we wouldn't have been in this position. So it was all triggered because of Slade.
Impressive performance by him. Now the Diamondbacks have moved themselves up to the second spot in the wild card standings. Out of the three teams that are in the wild card, they're now chasing Philadelphia for the top spot in the wild card after this recent hot streak. They take on the Dodgers on the road tonight in L.A. Zach Gallen and his 14-5 record up against Bobby Miller, who's 7-3. First pitch at 7:10. Cardinals came back to win. They beat the Vikings 18-17 despite trailing 14-0 early in the game. Jesse Luqueda rushed the passer. He actually blocked for the passer, caught passes, and played special teams. How hard was it, Jesse?
It's tough, but just a little discipline makes it a little easier. Just make sure I got my defensive fronts right. And then from then on, I get with Drew, decided to let me know what I got to do and execute it.
Zach McLeod, pass rusher. He was signed on Tuesday, went through a couple practices in Minnesota. He hasn't even practiced in Arizona yet, and he had 3 sacks. Head coach Jonathan Gannon.
He had really good energy since he's got here this week. He wants to play football and show some good things today.
Up next for the Cardinals, cut down day. That's tomorrow. They got to go from 90 players to 53. They take on Washington on the road Sunday, kickoff at 10. This was impressive. The Rising with a huge victory, 3-2 over Vegas. Arteaga missed a penalty kick in the first half, and the team was down 1-0. Yet he still comes back and scores to tie at 1-1. They get goals in the 81st and 82nd minute to take the lead 3-2 and move up to 6th place in the standings. They take on 1st place Sacramento at home, but it's a Wednesday night game at 7:30. Officially the worst team in the WNBA. They lost 77-74 versus Dallas. Now they take on Atlanta coming up tomorrow night on the road at 4 o'clock. And finally, the former mayor of North Dakota. His name is Ed Schaefer. He's filling in on a Friday morning radio show. And then during the commercial break, the receptionist comes in and she asks, do you own that car? He said, yes. And she said, okay, the police have it. It was stolen while he was live on the air. Now, of course, you may be wondering, why would the guy steal his car? Well, he didn't want to be late to his meeting with his probation officer. He then turned in the car because the former governor leaves a spare key inside, but not just any key, the actual key fob. So therefore, anybody can start the governor's car if they can get into it. He got his car back. We don't know what the probation officer said to the person who stole it.
What are you doing on Friday the 1st? I hope it's joining us for the celebration of labor of the Unplugged Army when we will be live at Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. Unplugged Army, I owe everything to Whirlwind Golf Club. Sweet Lou sponsoring the podcast. Hopefully you love this free content. And what I need from you is to always support our sponsors. And an event like this, this is why we have a sanctioned event. From 6 to noon, all programming on WTSMTV.com will be live from Whirlwind. You can watch, come have breakfast, come have lunch. And then at noon, golf, a $200 course for only $35 if you go to unplugged at whirlwind.com. That's unplugged at whirlwind.com for the celebration of labor on September 1st. And after golf, we're going to hang out for happy hour. So if you'd like to come meet the commander-in-chief of the Unplugged Army, granted I'm being a little crazy here, then please stop by anytime between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. at Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass.
I'm Janelle, general manager of Bell's Nashville Kitchen, a.k.a. the Whiskey Wizard. Bell's isn't your typical country bar with mediocre bar food. We are a scratch kitchen with chef-inspired dishes, and the only place you can get the best sandwich in all of Arizona, our Nashville hot chicken sandwich. Now, the drinks. I spend days infusing our own whiskey creations. Come in for Whiskey Wednesdays to learn about and drink our famous whiskey selection. We have live music most days and all weekend as part of our honky-tonk brunch.
Bell's Nashville Kitchen on Main Street in Old Town Scottsdale. You found home, down home.
You know, I admit to you totally, I can look right at this camera here at WTSMTV.com and say that if I was the head coach of a college football team, we would not win a game. I want to say that up front. Unless the head coach of the other team was the guy coaching the Ohio Bobcats right now. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Whatever it is that you decided to make Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day, my family greatly appreciates it. My name is Doug Franz, and you have found the only podcast in the world totally devoted to the coverage of the four major sports franchises of one great American city that drops on your phone and television every weekday morning. We also cover ASU, U of A, GCU, the Rattlers, the Rising, and the Merch. This is Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. Hi, I had a wonderful and crappy weekend. How was yours? It's 6-3 with 44 seconds left in the first half. And we decide to throw a screen into a soft zone. And it's an interception. And then we don't play defense. San Diego State goes right down the field, scores a touchdown. So instead of kicking and having a 9-3 lead at halftime, we're now down 10-6 at halftime. Then we can't stop anybody in the second half. And what do you do when you can't stop people? With 12 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, down by two possessions, we punt. We can't stop them. So why are we giving them the ball? It's 4th and 1. Go for it. It's not that hard. Thank you. I know you don't care about the Bobcats. I needed to get that off my chest. Tell me if this concerns you, okay? Very good friend. I won't say his name. Very good friend. Says, hey, you're going to San Diego? Do you want to use my condo? Of course I want to use your condo. Oh, my gosh. You know how much money the family saved on a trip we could not afford to mooch somebody else's condo. So thrilled. So thrilled he lets us use his condo. But then I walk into the condo, and I see something that is just downright frightening. Just downright frightening. The refrigerator has at least 47 magnets on it with all of these Christmas card postcards and pictures of, you know, family members, things like that. There's only one man that lives in this condo, and he lives there on occasion. Yet you have all of these magnetized pictures everywhere of student pictures and blah, blah, blah. Here's why this scares me. There's only one person in the history of planet Earth that has more magnetized pictures on the fridge. And that's the mother-in-law. The mother-in-law. Yes, that mother-in-law. The one you've heard about for 17 years. This is my friend. This is my friend. What man uses 47 magnets to put pictures up on the man's fridge?
This isn't... Who does that?
That was something else. That was shocking. That was shocking. Shocking to me. Like, I thought I knew this person. When you think you know somebody, and then you find out he's picture on the fridge guy. Because then when you open up to get beer, the magnets move around, pictures fall, and then you got to put stuff back up. Protect the fridge. All right. Today is countdown day. We're only 4 days away. 4 days away. Friday, September 1st, Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. The celebration of the labor of the Unplugged Army. And you are invited. A $200 course in which you can play for only $35. $35. That's it. That's all it takes. Doug Franz Unplugged live 6 to 8 this Friday morning. Come watch the show live. Okay? Then, from 8 to 10, Steve McCollum in the main event, Dale Hellestray, live from 8 to 10. Then our new sports, Eye on Sports. Izzy will be out there from 10 to noon. So 6 straight hours of live programming. And then at noon, let's tee off. You go to unplugged@whirlwind.com, unplugged@whirlwind.com. You click on the Learn More button, as Jeff Weir Production is describing to you right now on the television screen. If you're listening to the podcast, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, thank you. But if you want the step-by-step procedure, as soon as you get back from work today, then watch this on demand for free. Or become a Plus member, and you can be seeing it right now live. Now, this is the website where all you have to do is fill out your email information, and Sweet Lou will get back to you. We have a couple spots remaining. Don't worry. I realize you might say, Doug, is it going to be a little warm Friday? Well, it's not going to be as warm as it is Monday, Tuesday. Today and tomorrow are the heat advisories. It'll drop down a little bit by Friday. And you get a bottle of water on the before your round of golf. And then there's water all over the course for you to fill up that water bottle. So you'll have plenty of water. And then I can set records in beer consumption when I'm playing in the heat. So it doesn't affect me at all, so I'd love to see you out there. If the heat bothers you and you don't want to golf, then there's plenty of other opportunities to show your support as a member of the Unplugged Army. Either come out between 6 and noon and eat breakfast or lunch and watch the show, or come up for happy hour. If you don't want to golf, please stop by at some point between 4 and 7. Have a beer with us. Sit and talk sports with us. We'd love to see you out there at Civlic, which is the restaurant portion of Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. So all of us here at WTSM-TV will be making appearances between 6 in the morning and 6 in the afternoon. All day. All day event. Please figure out what works best for you to be a part of it. We'd love to see you out there if you could. That would be great. All right, sound credits today. azcardinals.com is where we got the Jesse Luceda and Jonathan Gannon sound we're going to play. Sun Devil Sources YouTube page is where we got the Kenny Dillingham from. So thanks a lot to Sun Devil Source. And you guys, I know you're working hard. They are getting ready for their big season preview just when ASU news dropped, and they have to change everything because it talks about how can they become bowl eligible now that they can't. So they have to change everything. And MLB.TV is where we got the Torrey Lovello from. So that's everything. Let's get this show going. Let's roll.
Doug's Big One.
Doug's Big One this morning. My number one opinion that I have to offer you today. Ray Anderson, the athletic director for Arizona State, is a coward. That's my number one opinion today. I am in shock this morning at the gutlessness of this athletic department, and that there's nobody we can count on in the state of Arizona to lead. I never talk politics on Doug Franz Unplugged. The reason why is, number one, you'll never figure out what my political affiliation is. Even if you think you know, you're wrong. Number two, we use this as an escape. We use sports as an escape because it's not supposed to be really that important. But I am forced to talk politics today. Please send a clip, if you are a listener or a member of the Unplugged Army, to your local state representative, your local state senator. I want all of you in the state government of Arizona to watch or listen to this very closely. If you dare run on a political campaign and you ever say the word education, you are a hypocritical fool. You don't care about education. How do we know? Because none of you have opened up an investigation into the Arizona State Athletic Department. This is a financial joke. $4 million was given to Herm Edwards. You could have fired him with cause, paid nothing. But because that's Ray Anderson's friend, this university paid $4 million to him and said, thanks for everything. But now they're issuing a bowl ban against kids. Over half of these kids, because of the turnover that Kenny Dillingham had to go through to put a product on the field, half of these kids haven't even met Herm Edwards. And yet you're telling them they can't go to a bowl game. Who are you going to throw over to the ship next, Ray? Whose fault is it this time? At the beginning of your tenure, you didn't have the courage to fire Todd Graham after a bad season. But then you let him hang out to dry the next year when he actually went 6-3 and finished in second place. But you fired him saying you couldn't stand finishing in second place in a middling division anymore. How many times did Herm Edwards do better than second place? Zero. When you hired him, you told us this is the new NFL model, that you were the president of the team. So the president of the team watched over while either everybody underneath him was cheating or you were a part of it. You either coached it or condoned it. Then you spent $4 million on him to go away. State senators, where's the investigation? How do we have this money to just send it away? But you're going to run on some campaign where you're promising us education reform. We're obviously loaded as a state. We don't need to give teachers a raise. We've got so much money, we can pay coaches who cheat just to go away. The University of Tennessee recently was hit with sanctions by the NCAA. You know what they did? The NCAA realized something really important. Why go after kids and take away their opportunities to go to bowl games when it's a new group of kids that are at the school? They don't have anything to do with a previous regime. So they fined Tennessee $8 million. You know what our school did? Our school said, no, don't fine us. Let us throw the kids off overboard. Let us rob them of the opportunity to go to a bowl game as punishment for us. Yet Ray Anderson is still the athletic director. Someone answer that question. How is that man an athletic director in Division I sports when he can just take from kids? Don't tell me, Mr. Politician, that you're fighting for education, that you're fighting for kids. No, you're not. No, you're not. When you let this stuff happen, every day this man is the athletic director of Arizona State, this entire state is a joke. Even U of A fans, I'm sure you think this is kind of funny. But at what point is it no longer funny that we're spending millions of dollars to cover up this man's mistakes before somebody realizes, wait a minute, this is money we don't have. And you're taking opportunities from kids. That is the height of gutlessness. This school, ask anybody else in the Pac-12. Why do you think the Pac-12 fell apart? Why? Don't you think it was to get away from Dr. Crow? Don't you think USC and UCLA saw the writing on the wall? Dr. Crow was totally in favor of Larry Scott, who spent millions upon millions of dollars on his own travel that the conference paid for. Do you know he was the highest paid conference commissioner in all of Division I athletics? That's money ASU partially paid for. And nobody wanted to investigate that. Do you know that the Pac-12 spent more money on their actual studios and offices than any other conference in all of Division I athletics? That's money partially paid for by U of A and ASU. Yet nobody cares. Nobody in our state government stands up and says, wait a minute, how do we have this much money that we can afford all this? And nobody even had the foresight to say, you know what, Phoenix is kind of cool. Why don't we try to get the Pac-12 offices here in Phoenix? Do I think we would have won that battle? No. But it's better than having it in a high rise in San Francisco's financial district. So we just spent money on that. Then you didn't fire Herm Edwards because of the cheating. You didn't fire Herm Edwards because you thought, you know what, let's actually stand on our morals and do things the right way. You fired him because he lost to Eastern Michigan. But you paid him $4 million to go away. Ray, let me ask you this. If I'm out of line here, then let me ask you this question. If this was so egregious that we had to have a bowl ban, then why did you fire him without cause and pay him $4 million? How are these two opinions not the most hypocritical thing in college athletics right now? You're a joke. And your president is gutless for not standing up to you and firing you. And the Board of Regents are gutless because they don't stand up to Dr. Crow for the support he gave to Larry Scott and George Kliavkoff and this crazy Apple deal that was all Star Trekian that was going to save the world from the forces of evil that pushed UCLA, USC, Oregon, and UW out of the conference. We have a conference game next year, possibly in Orlando. Someone explain how that's good for the kids. We're actually standing up for kids by saying, guys, we're going to fly you to Orlando for a conference game, but you don't get to go to a bowl game. Sir, what did I do? Nothing. You didn't do anything wrong, but you can't go to a bowl game. Because of the rampant cheating, because we need to self-impose a bowl ban? If this group had any leadership at all, we would have taken a bowl ban last year. Last year. See, these people are so arrogant to think they didn't do anything wrong. Everyone with a clue on how the NCAA works, you look at the situation of the cheating, you stand up to it, Ray Anderson, and you actually admit, yes, you were a part of it. Or you say, I wasn't a part of it, I can't believe this happened, and therefore we are going to be above board with the NCAA, and we're going to actually hammer ourselves now. You could have self-imposed last year with an interim assistant coach as the head coach and then started anew this year. And not only that, you waited until 4 days before the first game to tell these kids everything you've worked for. Now that the transfer portal is closed, everything you've done this offseason, everything you've done in the preseason, we don't care. We're going to blame you. So far the track record of Ray Anderson, throw Todd Graham off the boat. That doesn't work. Hire your buddy. Then, when your buddy's leading a cheating organization, we blame two young staffers and force them to go in front of the NCAA Committee on Infractions. You force them to go. Don't think I don't know that. Have you ever heard of a man by the name of David Ridpath? How many of you know who David Ridpath is? David Ridpath is a professor at a Midwestern college who volunteered his own time to represent two young ASU staffers to the NCAA because ASU tried to blame them for the actions of the president of an NFL model, who's just the athletic director, the assistant athletic director, and the head coach. And when that didn't work, then we started throwing assistants overboard. And when throwing low-level assistants didn't work, then we started throwing the defensive coordinator overboard. When that didn't work, we threw the head coach overboard, but we acted like we didn't do anything wrong. It's only because you lost to Eastern Michigan. But we're going to pay you to go away. And now that that didn't work, we're now going to throw an entire senior class overboard and say, you can't go to a bowl game. Someone in this organization be accountable. So far, every step of the way, it's been low-level person, low-level person, low-level person. But zero people in the athletic department knew about this. Zero people in the entire athletic department never knew that the university was cheating. That's the only thing we can believe. And then if that's the case, why didn't you know? Are you that bad at your job you didn't know? You didn't even fire Herm Edwards because of the cheating scandal. You fired him because he lost to Eastern Michigan. Are you telling me if they would have beaten Eastern by 30, he would still have a job? I guess.
please, someone in our state government, quit being a wuss. Be the first person to say, I'm going to open up an investigation. Be the first person in our government to say, I actually care about the student athletes of Arizona State. Someone be in charge of our state institutions. Someone fight for kids. Please. I don't care if you hate football, love athletics, hate athletics. Right now, ASU sold a bill of goods to a bunch of kids and then took their knees out from underneath them. Kenny Dillingham, what's happened to you is incredibly unfair. And I am so appreciative that you're the head coach of ASU because you spent your whole life wanting this job. You're the only leader in the room and the only one that can get us out of this. And whatever you need from the Unplugged Army, we support you. But I'm sorry, I'm not spending a dime at that university until Ray Anderson is gone. Coming up next. We got a lot to talk about with the Arizona Cardinals and what happened on Saturday and this mess that's in the quarterback room. What does it mean for Thursday, for Friday, for Saturday, and Sunday morning's game? That's coming up next. This is Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass on WTSMTV.com. Had a nice relaxing weekend. How about you? Good morning. Thanks for being a member of the Unplugged Army. Can't wait to meet you if I haven't yet. Coming up Friday at Wild Horse Pass and the golf club that's Whirlwind Golf Club. Can't wait to see you. WTSMTV.com out there for 6 hours. So really looking forward to Friday. Cardinals, a lot of interesting decisions to come up with for tomorrow, really. And then that's just the half of it, because I think there are so many holes up and down this roster that Arizona's going to need to then get their 53 and then go poach players somewhere else and replace their own players. Now, what I mean by that is coming up tomorrow, you have to go from 90 players to 53 players. So you cut a bunch of guys. Now you turn in your 53-man roster. Everybody you've cut, when you cut them, if you still like aspects of their game or you think they can help you, you're going to ask them to join the practice squad. However, they still have to clear waivers or be declared a free agent, depending on how many years of service, and have an opportunity to sign anywhere else. So all of your players that you're cutting have a chance to go somewhere else. Now, here's where it gets interesting. I think there are so many spots on this roster that just aren't good enough that if good players get cut somewhere else, the players that are cut somewhere else are going to be better than some of your players. So as of Tuesday, as of tomorrow, there could be a player that makes the team. And then Wednesday, they sign a player in your position, and they cut you. And so you made the team Tuesday, but you didn't make it Wednesday. And they replace you. But then they want you on the practice squad, which might take the spot of somebody they wanted on the practice squad Tuesday. So that whole process takes a little while. And, oh, by the way, you've got a game Sunday. So the normal week of preparation is kind of crazy. I shouldn't say Sunday. I keep saying Sunday like it's this Sunday. A week from Sunday. Sorry about that. I got confused by week zero. Usually you have the first week of college football, and then the next weekend you have the first weekend of the NFL. Being a Bobcat fan, I went to a game last weekend, the first weekend of college football, and forgot, wait a minute, that's week zero. The first normal weekend of college football is this weekend, so I keep saying you've got a game Sunday. Way off. You've got a game next Sunday against Washington. But it still is the same situation when it comes to the cuts. That still happens tomorrow. So I was right about that. Sorry to make it seem like we're on a short week. So it's next Thursday that you have the beginning of the NFL season, which is about, what, 9 days from right now. So you cut people basically today to get to a 53-man roster by tomorrow, but then you're going to be picking up other players that were cut somewhere else, putting them on your roster. So there's a massive shuffling that's going to be going on over the next 3 or 4 days for the Arizona Cardinals to get set with their 53-man roster and their practice squad. So this is a huge test for Monty Austin, for Jonathan Gannon, and it's going to be interesting to watch who is really guys that they're counting on. One of the big decisions that happened Sunday, I think, is having Clark, the cornerback, not play, but having Christian, the cornerback, actually play, because it shows you where they are in the battle of who's fighting for a spot and who's not. If you play in the third preseason game, it means one of two things. We're about to cut you or we're about to trade you. Now, maybe not the punter, but most players who played are probably on their way out. And does that apply to every single person? No, of course not, because you don't have enough numbers to cut everybody that played. Then there's the question of a Clayton Toon, for an example. You don't normally draft a kid and give up on him right from the beginning. Let's go through some of the things that were said yesterday. We'll start with Jonathan Gannon. Jonathan Gannon spoke to the media, and what kind of grabbed me about where he went, sorry that I got to scroll through my notes, he was talking about the – oh, no, do I have something? Yeah, where's my Gannon? There it is. One of the things to really look at, especially when it comes to cut down day tomorrow, is the offensive line room. Because they had two big injuries coming on, or that happened on Saturday, but happened after they traded a good ball player, Jones out of Houston, traded to Houston. To me, either underachieved or I was just wrong. I don't want to admit I was wrong yet, and I'm not afraid to. It's more because I want to see what the Texans do with him. But he was, to me, a second-round dude that was drafted later. I was the only one that was, you know, way off on him. I thought he was going to be an excellent player, and he wasn't. But I would like to hope that it was coaching. When you fire your offensive line coach in the middle of a season because you claim he did things in some kind of hotel when he still denies it, and nobody really wants to admit what truly happened, and now you're wondering why an offensive lineman did not grow into the position, I'm gonna take pause here and say maybe it's the organization. Now, if he goes to Houston and does nothing for the Texans, then I got to come out with it. You know, when you're 0 for 2, the problem's you. And then it was my fault. I misevaluated him as a lineman, and I'm equal to Steve Keim at running drafts. I'd like to think I'm better, but that would be what I would have to eat. So we'll see how he does with the Texans. But now, if you've got two injuries on the line right after you just traded a good swing lineman, that's a little bit of an issue. So post-game, Jonathan Gannon was asked about the injuries and players that had to leave the field during the Vikings game.
We'll see. We got to see what the medics say. But Gainsey had a little bit of a knee, I think. Daly had an ankle. Arias had he went in the protocol. He got knocked on the one. So we'll see how we go here through the next week.
He said Gainsey. I think Gainsey's a third rounder. Do you mind if I cheat and look it up? Am I right? No, it doesn't say on my cool little sheet. Oh, here it is. So he is fourth round. I was off by a round, so I apologize for being dead wrong on that. So he's a fourth round pick that's the backup center. This is a big deal because they were impressed enough with him that they're going to keep him. So now he's going to take a roster spot, unless the injury is bad enough that you put him on IR. If you put him on IR, he can't play for the first month of the season, and you need to get yourself a backup center because now you have none. Now, I'm sure that in a pinch, if Froholt gets hurt, you can talk Beecham into figuring out how to play center the rest of the game, but he's not the backup center. So you're now going, you've got a week and a half to figure out, do you have a backup center? You can't go into the game next weekend without a backup center. So that now opens a door that you just traded O-line depth, and now you need O-line depth because of the potential of these two injuries. So we've got to watch that one, especially the Gaines injury. So those two injuries, it's weird. You go into that into this weekend thinking, here's my plan for the O-line room, and boom, in one preseason game, that plan is totally wrecked. The other thing to look at is the quarterback room. The quarterback room, gosh, what a mess. So it's not clear yet, but it feels like it. I don't think you make the trade for Dobbs if Kyler Murray is expected to play week one. And not only that, I don't think you're going to have all of these quarterbacks and have Kyler even on the active roster. Make sure that you know this. There's a difference between your roster and an inactive, okay? An inactive means you're on the 53-man roster. You're just not active on game day. A really stupid NFL rule. It's one of the dumbest rules in all of sports, if you didn't know. The idea that you have a 53-man roster, but on game day, not all 53 men can play. Well, then why have a 53-man roster? It makes no sense. You're paying people not to play. I'll never get that. They say it's to even out salary cap and to even out the opportunities for so teams like other teams can't just stockpile the best players on the 53-man roster and then have them while there's not enough players for somebody else. I've heard this. I don't even know if the NFL agrees with me on this. So therefore, if you cut off the bottom, say, seven people and say, okay, you're on the team, but you're not allowed to play, well, then a wealthy team is less inclined to go out and stockpile too much talent that's not even going to play. So therefore, it leaves more talent for the rest of the league. Well, then have fewer teams. You know, if there's not enough talent for 32 teams, then have fewer teams. But I will never accept that as a good idea. But having said that, that's what you would be looking at. And so that means you're inactive, but you're still on the active roster. Totally different than IR. IR means you're on the active roster, but we've moved you off of the 53 so someone can fill your spot. And then in 4 weeks, you come back in. And now we get to make a decision on whether or not we're putting you on the roster or not. Now, you can wait till week 5, week 6, week 7. You can wait further on down the year. But IR means you can't do it for 4 weeks at the beginning of the season. And I believe that changes in the regular season after week 1. I think after that, then it's 3 games. Anytime you put somebody on IR, they're out for 3 games, and you can replace them, and then in 3 games, you've got to make a decision, or you're allowed to make a decision on whether or not you're bringing them back. Honestly, the IR rules change a little bit, so give me plus or minus a weekend on when you're allowed to bring a guy back, but that's the gist of IR. That means it's clear to me Kyler's going on IR. So now your quarterback room right now is Colt McCoy, Clayton Tune, David Blough, and the newly trade for Joshua Dobbs. You're not going to trade for Dobbs and then cut him. So we know he's in there. And this year you're allowed to have a third emergency quarterback. So that means two guys are active, one guy's in pads ready to go, but kind of, this is going to sound funny, kind of inactive. But if one of your first two quarterbacks gets hurt bad enough that you say he's out of the game, once you declare him out, then your other two quarterbacks, this guy now becomes one of the two quarterbacks, and you can activate the emergency quarterback. That way you don't have a Brock Purdy situation with San Francisco that he can't play anymore and he's handing the ball off and that's it because you don't have any other quarterbacks. So that's how that process works. Well, if you got Kyler off the 53 – you still have these four quarterbacks, and we know Dobbs is going to make it, okay? That means you have two spots left at quarterback, and you have three quarterbacks. There are some people that are actually speculating Colt McCoy is going to get cut. I don't believe that to save my life. I think Colt McCoy is going to start, and then it becomes Clayton Tune or David Blough. Well, David Blough, I'm the only guy with his opinion, so make sure you know that. David Blough, to me, has far and away outplayed Clayton Tune. So if it's about who is the best, who can help you win more games, you would keep David Blough.
But every organization in the world likes to have a third-string quarterback that is the developmental prospect and say, hey, we believe in this guy, so we're going to go with him. Interesting play that happened with Clayton Tune in this game. He's backed up inside his own 10-yard line. Strip fumble, recovered by Minnesota. They get the touchdown. That was all quarterback air. Now, a lot of people that have a casual knowledge of the game, whenever a quarterback gets sacked, they blame the offensive line. You might not realize this. There's always one player that if they come on a blitz, that's the quarterback's responsibility. The quarterback is supposed to know that guy's on me, and if that guy rushes, I've immediately got to throw hot. And then there's another receiver that's supposed to know. He's supposed to watch. Hey, that guy blitzed. That makes me hot. And now you don't run the pattern that the play calls for. You run the pattern when you're hot, which is almost always a quick slant. That way you immediately get in the view of the quarterback so he can throw you the ball. Well, Clayton Tune dropped back and never once looked at one end of the line. It was at the top part of your screen if you were watching. Never looked at it, never saw the blitzing Ward come at him, took a shot, fumbled, and now the Vikings score. Well, a lot of people were impressed that Clayton Tune played better from that point on. They take that as a positive. They know a rookie quarterback's going to make a mistake. They want to know, how do you recover from it? And that was the question that was asked to Jonathan Gannon about, despite the strip fumble, do you think Clayton Tune took a step forward?
I did. You know, the one strip sack fumble, that was a big play in the game. And then next play out, he throws an explosive to Doors. So I like how he had a quick memory. You know, he responded the right way. I think we scored a field goal on that drive, let us down there. But I took a step forward.
So, granted, last week he told us he likes where Isaiah Simmons is. Well, I guess he was being honest. Well, he liked where he is. He was in trade talks. So that's why he liked where he was. So now he's telling us, I think he took a step forward. That obviously doesn't mean, hey, you've made the team. But even though I think Blau has had a better camp, I don't think the team cares. I don't think the team cares at all. So I think they don't want to give up on a rookie that they've just drafted, and they wouldn't have drafted him if they didn't believe in him. So unless he's really dumb in the meeting room, and yeah, that does happen, you know. Sometimes you draft a guy that you think you see stuff on film, and then you really get him into the room and you realize this guy doesn't know anything. We really failed on this pick. Unless this guy doesn't get it at all in the meeting room, Clayton Tune makes the team. So that means David Blau is out, and your quarterback roster will be Kyler Murray, IR, Colt McCoy, the starter, Dobbs probably the backup already, and Clayton Tune then the emergency quarterback. The reason why I say that is Dobbs was with Drew Petzing for a little bit in Cleveland. So he's run the Drew Petzing offense, who's the offensive coordinator. He's not going to take a huge deal of coaching, and there's no way they would have made a run at him if they didn't think we can play him almost immediately. Because why else do it? And there's also a clear-cut thing that what this says, that they weren't happy with the room. I am guessing they like Clayton Tune, but they quickly realized he's not ready in combination with Kyler not being ready. They either need Kyler to be ready and Colt to be the backup, or they need Colt to start and Clayton Tune be ready to play at an NFL level. And I think you make that trade for Dobbs when you're saying, we're not ready right now. One thing that this brings up, and you know, a lot of times when I've talked to general managers of any sport, they say, yes, we plan ahead, but crap seems to happen all the time that makes decisions for us, so we don't worry about it. But what happens when Kyler's healthy? When Kyler's healthy, what are you going to do? Are you going to cut a player you've given up a draft pick for in Dobbs? Are you going to cut Tune, a player that you've developed and you even kept on the roster despite David Blau outperforming him and having two comeback victories as the backup quarterback? Or are you going to cut Colt McCoy? And you're going to say, Colt, thanks for everything, but Dobbs is now up to speed. He can be our backup. And we don't need you because you're not
cutting Kyler, I assume, unless they're looking at Kyler thinking there's no reason for him to even play. Like, why play him? We might as well use our first two picks if you're not going after any quarterbacks in the first two picks, because they've got Houston's pick and their own. So then they might be saying, we're going to go get a receiver and a pass rusher or a corner or something like that, and then turn around this franchise in 2024 with Kyler still at the helm. Because anything else doesn't really make sense. You have to cut one of those four guys, unless you're hoping, there's another option, you can actually cut, well, it would be the same thing, you cut Clayton Tune and you hope nobody else wants it. Because here's the rules of cutting. Let's say Kyler comes back. I'm going to throw out, like, I don't know, but let's throw it out. Let's say he comes back week six, okay? So Kyler's back in week six. You cut Clayton Tune and you hope nobody picks him up, because then you can put him on your practice squad and he's right there. But once you cut somebody, they have the opportunity to sign anywhere else they want to. Here's the one caveat to that. I believe it's 3 weeks. I might be wrong and it's only two, but I think it's 3 weeks. The team that signs him must put him on their active roster. So would another team watch Clayton Tune's tape in college and in these first three preseason games and say, this kid is so good, let's pick him up, cut somebody on our team, and just let him sit on our roster for 3 weeks and do nothing? Just be there at the games. We'll name him inactive. We'll name him our emergency quarterback. And then he's just going to be on the bench. And then in 3 weeks, we'll try to get him on the practice squad. Or he stays on the active roster the whole time. That would be your options. Do you want to run that risk of losing Clayton Tune when you cut David Blau to keep him? That's all the things that Monty Ossenfort is juggling in this quarterback situation. But you don't make the trade for Dobbs unless you've already got that plan. Doesn't mean the plan can't change, but you've already got a plan. And I think this shows just how long Kyler Murray is going to be out and the risk they're about to run when week six, week seven comes around and they cut Clayton Tune with the hope he doesn't sign anywhere. This is a huge gamble, and it'll be really a good judgment of Monty Ossenfort's ability to read the room, to be able to see what's about to happen. And none of this matters if Kyler doesn't play all year. If Kyler's out all year, then it's Colt McCoy, Joshua Dobbs, and your emergency quarterback all year long, Clayton Tune, and you never have to cut any of them. And then you start afresh in 2024. I say, for Kyler's sake, I think Kyler should do whatever it takes to get back on the field, to prove to his teammates that he's tough, something he's never been able to do, and to make sure nobody talks about Caleb Williams anymore. Nobody talks about USC football. Nobody talks about being the number one guy. Now, last night, I was watching a friend of mine, Mark May, and Mark May said something very interesting. He said, let's say the Cardinals get the number one pick in the draft, and Kyler either doesn't come back, Kyler does struggle, you want to go after a new quarterback, you're Monty Ossenfort, you want to be able to put your stamp on the team. He said, why in the world would Williams accept getting traded, or excuse me, getting drafted by the Cardinals? That if the Cardinals have the number one pick, he should let it be known immediately, I'm not coming. Now, a lot of people would rip him for that. They say you're a prima donna when you do that. But it worked out for John Elway, and it worked out for Eli Manning. John Elway didn't do anything with Baltimore and forced a trade to Denver. Eli Manning, it was a little strange. Eli Manning, a lot of people forget, he got drafted by the San Diego Chargers. Number one overall by the Chargers. And then the Chargers had it worked out with the Giants that if Phillip Rivers is there for the Giants would draft Phillip Rivers. And then they would make a trade. But only if it worked out that way. So if Phillip Rivers would have been drafted by somebody other than the Giants, it's really interesting to think what would history have been, because the Chargers would not have been able to get their pre-draft trade worked out.
Then they've got Eli Manning who says, I'm not playing for you. How's that going to go? How would that have gone? We'll never know. But would Caleb do the same thing? I think he would. I think he would. Now, Joe Burrow didn't do it. When we look up and down really messed up organizations, okay, as messed up as I think the Cardinals are, I think the Bengals in their history since Paul Brown died have been messed up even more. And Joe Burrow, maybe it's because he's an Ohioan, maybe it's because he's from a 2.5 hour away city and liked the idea of going back to Ohio, said, I'll take it. And he didn't fight against it. And now he's about to be paid handsomely. And he's the savior of a franchise. Worked out great for him. But what about Caleb? I don't know. I don't know. Do the Cardinals have a track history of developing young quarterbacks? No, not at all. Is that the fault of Jonathan Gannon or Monty Ossenfort? No, not at all. But do the Cardinals have a strong track history of great ownership and great leadership and playoff-bound teams year after year after year? No. So does Caleb want to come in and say, you know what, I want to be Joe Burrow. I want to take a downtrodden franchise, and I want that. I want that challenge. Or does he say, no way. And now the Cardinals have a different option of being forced to trade, but that lets them know they need to keep Kyler Murray. And if I'm Kyler, I want to erase all that. I want you to use two picks to make the 2024 Cardinals better and keep me a quarterback if I'm Kyler. So I'm doing whatever it takes to get back onto the team and start some games this year. And then that gets into the Clayton Tune cutting. So that's everything that's ahead of the Cardinals right now and what they've got to deal with both today, tomorrow, and really in the next 5 to 6 weeks. Of the future of the quarterback position. I don't think there's going to be a lot of shock when you look at the roster now that they've already traded an Isaiah Simmons, they've already traded Josh Jones, they've already traded some different players. The bigger news will happen to me at the end of the week when players that thought they made the team are then released because there's no way the Cardinals are done churning over this roster. I'll tell you what, we'll have Bobby Mack on this week to talk about, you know what? Bobby Mack doesn't know this, so this is highly rude. Maybe we'll try to talk him into making an appearance coming out on Friday. Maybe, maybe. Whirlwind, or unplugged at whirlwind.com. Unplugged at whirlwind.com. That might not be that crazy. All right, coming up next. Diamondbacks took 3 out of 4 from the Cincinnati Reds. The Diamondbacks are moving up, but they still have these holes in the pitching rotation. Did one get filled over the weekend? Did both spots get filled over the weekend? That's next. This is Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass on WTSMTV.com.
It's hot. We've had a pretty hot summer here in Arizona. Who can you trust with your air conditioning? There's only one place my family has ever trusted in Arizona, and that's Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. Call 602-2-REPAIR, that's 602, the number 2, then REPAIR for Parker & Sons. And the reason why I suggest them to you as passionately as I possibly can is I know they've showed up on time to my home every time, and they've gotten it right the first time every time, and they've treated me fairly every time. What else can you say? Plus, they don't charge anything for nights, weekends, emergencies. That means something, because when your air conditioner goes out in the summer in Arizona, that's an emergency. You need repairs fast, and you can trust Parker & Sons. How do I know? Because my family does. 602-2-REPAIR, that's 602, the number 2, then REPAIR for Parker & Sons. Rosati Sports Pub in Chandler. It's on Ray and McQueen. Sounds like a sports bar. What's the difference? You walk in and they actually have games on TV with the sound on. How many times do you walk into a supposed sports bar and they've got loud music on or somebody playing live or some kind of trivia game going on and you're there to watch the game? If you're like me, a simple guy, give me my pizza, give me my wings, give me my cold beer and make sure I can hear the Suns and D-backs, then you want Rosati Sports Pub at Chandler. All members of the Unplugged Army, welcome. Rosati Sports Pub, give me the game.
the Diamondbacks, how strange. I'm still floored with how bad some of the baseball is that they're playing. Yet, when I watched the Reds this weekend, I don't know if you felt the same way I do, but the whole time the result matched what happened. Diamondbacks take 3 out of 4 from Cincinnati, and the Reds didn't deserve to win anything. What a trash ball club right now. Oh, my gosh. The base running is worse than the Diamondbacks. The decision-making, the snowball fights, which is a great baseball term for throwing the ball all over the place. The errors. I mean, they hit Tony Parascica with a throw. If you didn't plunk the third, it cost the Diamondbacks a run by them hitting the third base coach instead of the ball being thrown up the left field line. It was crazy, crazy bad baseball over the weekend. But who cares? Diamondbacks take 3 out of 4, and you could argue should have had a sweep. They're up 4-1 in the top of the 8th inning on Saturday. Up 4-1 and lose the game because Sewald has another blown save, his 5th of the season, and his 2nd as a Diamondback, I think. He might have had 3 as a Diamondback. I'm starting to lose track. But he is not the closer that the Diamondbacks tried to present, and in no way do I think he's worth the trade of Rojas. Now, granted, Rojas did not do enough. You know, you can't sit and defend Josh Rojas and act like he was traded unfairly because he had plenty of opportunities to do more and didn't get it done. But I think the upside of him was so good. But listen, you needed bullpen help. Sometimes you overreach, and Sewald with another blown save. And I wouldn't feel like this if it, you know, closers blow saves from sometimes. With the amount of times that Sewald has blown a save, and then the saves that he does have are so choppy and scary, when you live the high wire act, I don't give you too much credit, and I look at your blown saves as more par for the course. Even if you had the same amount of blown saves, if all of your other saves are 1-2-3 jobbers, one guy gets on and that's it, and you get them out, you have 4 batters faced, okay. Then the blown save is more of an anomaly. When you're always escaping and always allowing runners on base, well, then you're just flirting with it. And you're getting lucky to get somebody out at the end and avoid it because of the mess that you put on the base pass. So I'm not a huge, you know, Sewald guy right now. Well, he blows it, and then Castro, who blows everything every time he's out there, gave up 3 runs, and the Diamondbacks somehow, in the bottom of the 10th, retied it Saturday, and then they ended up the loser as another set of runs came in on Chrismet. Here's my point. The two guys that you come in with the most question marks look good. In which Saturday, Davies pitched 5 innings, gave up only 1 earned run, struck out 5. And then Slade Ciccone came in on Sunday as the starting pitcher. He went 5 2/3. They gave him a little bit more room to grow. And he struck out 5 and only gave up 1 earned run. So these are 2 days where you have been doing bullpen days. You've got problems. And now you've got 2 guys that you're saying you're our starters. And when they're not your aces, and they give you 5 innings of 1 inning of 1 earned run, you're going to take that. You're going to take that almost every time. And that's, even though they lost Saturday, that's the big takeaway from the weekend. Now, I'm not going to jump up and down and believe in Zach Davies totally because he was a miserable failure earlier in the year. But if he's healthy, and when I say miserable, I mean it's like you're not even a major league pitcher. So if he got some things corrected and got himself healthy, hey, we're that desperate to find a starting pitcher. So it doesn't hurt to give him another shot. And when he pitches well enough, well, you're going to run with that in a heartbeat. And then there was Slade Ciccone, who did not get a decision, but pitched well. Here's manager Torrey Lovello talking about yesterday's game and probably the feeling in the clubhouse after taking 3 out of 4 from Cincinnati.
That was a good bounce back win. Yesterday's frustration didn't linger through the entire game. You know, I felt like none of it happens without Slade. If Slade doesn't go out there and execute, you know, we wouldn't have been in this position. So it was all triggered because of Slade. It was fastball command, quality secondary stuff, and just really did a really nice job. And look, these young players, they prepare for it. They're being tutored and taught at a very high level in player development. And as I've explained, the group that comes up has to come up here and perform. They're not Sunday helpers. They got to come up here and execute to help us win baseball games right now. And Slade has certainly done that. That's what starting pitching does. And when they go out there and have quality outings, it allows you to kind of sit back and sort through your bullpen the right way. I'm extremely proud of this group. I'm extremely proud of the belief that they had in one another. They stayed connected. That clubhouse is extremely connected. And when they remain that way, they can do pretty powerful things. And I think you're watching this happen right before your very eyes because of what they're doing together with the Gurriel home run. That one little piece, that one little injection of energy, that woke up the entire dugout. And I felt like at that point, good things were going to happen. Onward to LA. I want the guys to enjoy this. We will. But at some point tonight, we got to turn the page and get ready for a really good three-game series in LA.
Let's talk about that. Zach Gallen on the hill today, taking on LA, three-game series against the first-place Dodgers. And the standings right now in the National League wildcard race, because of the way that the Diamondbacks have been playing, they have vaulted themselves up to the number two spot in the three-team wildcard race. Well, it's really a six-team race right now, but there's three spots that you can get to get the wild card. And right now, the Diamondbacks are in I said second, and I missed one. They're in third. Phillies are 3.5 up in the first wild card spot. Diamondbacks are a half game behind the Cubs. They're not comfortable, but they're now a game and a half ahead of San Francisco and the Reds. And Miami is now three games back. Not comfortable, especially when you're going to Los Angeles to be able to take on the Dodgers. But what's nice is you've got Zach Gallen on the mound today. So you, I'm not going to say you win, but if you can get that win and at least take game one, you know that you're going to avoid the sweep and be in a better position going forward. So this obviously is enormous because I don't think anybody expects the Diamondbacks to take two out of three from Los Angeles. Then, after that, the Diamondbacks return home for a series against Baltimore and Colorado, and then a massive stretch of games after that. Here's where I want to point your attention to. Okay, Baltimore, by the way, a playoff team battling it out like crazy, but very young. Then you have, in the middle of September, follow me on this, Diamondbacks have four at Chicago and four at the Mets. And then three home against Chicago and two home against San Francisco. So in that stretch of game, not that the Mets are good in any stretch of the imagination, but in that stretch of games, you are going to play 13 games in which 9 of the 13 games are against teams dead middle of the wild card, with 7 of them against the Cubs that are right there with you and one of them that's right next to it. So those are the overall standings. If you want this Jeff Weir production, you can scroll up a tiny bit and click on the button that says wild card, and then that'll move everything into wild card standings. And then what's interesting about the wild card is the fact that the Cubs are in second place, and that's who the Diamondbacks are going to be playing 7 games out of 10 against the Cubs starting September 7th. So just as huge as this series was against the Reds, it's that huge coming up against the Cubs. In the meantime, that's 9. Now, granted, that's 9 games away. At Dodgers, home against Baltimore, and home against the Rockies before that stretch. Then let's look at the end of the season. 3 games back at New York. The travel is going to be tough because you just came from New York, flew home to play Cubs and Giants, and then you do have an off day, but you fly back to New York, 3 against the Yankees. Then you go to Chicago, 3 against the White Sox. Then you've got 3 games at home against the Astros. And what's I never thought this would matter, but with the way that the Astros are playing and the way that they're fighting for a playoff spot, I was actually hoping that that end of the season series with the Astros wasn't going to matter. And the reason why is I figured the Astros was just kind of getting their bullpen set, lining things up for the end of the season, maybe even having a September call-up pitch. So while these games are important for the Diamondbacks, I figured when I looked at the schedule, the Astros would have a big enough lead
in the West that the series wouldn't be all that huge. That's not the case. There's a massive battle going on right now in which Seattle is the leaders of the AL West, and the Rangers and Astros are tied only one game back. So they're in the middle of this hotly contested race for the division while they're trying to push down Toronto and Boston, as Toronto and Boston are right behind Texas and Houston, because both of those two teams have, as long as they don't catch Seattle, have the bottom of the wild card spot. So there's a very good chance these are must-win games at the end of the season for the Diamondbacks and the Astros to end the season. And did I just say at the end of the season to end the season? I think I did. That's a talented broadcaster right there. But those three games are at home, so you have this vicious stretch of September in which the Diamondbacks laid the biggest egg you could for July and the beginning of August. But now, since their resurgence, if you don't mind me doing the math in my head, I think they've won 10 of 12, 10 of their last 12. And there's nobody in baseball hotter than the Diamondbacks right now. That's what's really scary. The hottest team in baseball over the last 10 games is the Arizona Diamondbacks. So a complete reversal. And everybody in that organization was saying, we're not this bad. We're going to be able to reverse it. It's going to be okay. I don't think what anybody thought is the Diamondbacks were going to be able to reverse it and stink while they did it. Yet they keep winning, and they're not playing well. But at least this last weekend, the baseball got a little better. I didn't like some of the moves of Torrey Lovello. I don't like sacrifice bunts for Jace Peterson and Jose Herrera. But they didn't bunt. I mean, you bunted before they came up to the plate. So if you're watching us right now on WTSMTV.com as a Plus member, thanks for being a Plus member. If you're watching us on demand, hey, that's great. We need you. Everybody here that helps out with Doug Franz Unplugged appreciates it. My family appreciates it. But if you ever want to watch us live, step up and become a Plus member. Jeff Weir Production has put the wild card standings up. And you can see that the Padres are basically dead. Think about how bad the Nationals and Mets have been all year. And then realize that the Padres are right there with them. The Padres are tied with the Washington Nationals this year. How funny is that Juan Soto trade now? Washington's a losing organization. I don't want to sign with you. Okay, we're going to trade you to San Diego. And now we're just as good as San Diego. So the Marlins aren't dead yet, but they're starting to struggle. They're a game above 500. And then is the real race. Giants and Reds at a game and a half apiece behind the Arizona Diamondbacks. And that's why if you're looking at the standings right now, there's a line for the Diamondbacks in the games back category. And the reason why that line is there is to say they're not games back. They are the spot that everybody is chasing to get into the wild card. The numbers in the game back category above the Diamondbacks represent how much, in a sense, safer the Phillies and Cubs are. Like, for the Phillies to get knocked out, they would need three teams to leapfrog in front of them. And they've got a 3.5 game lead on, in a sense, the, you know, most of the teams that need to be able to jump up and get them. So, of course, that could go away in an entire month of baseball, but they've really got to fall on their face for that to happen. But the Diamondbacks have already fallen on their face. Remember, at one point, they were 16 games above 500. They dropped all the way to two games below 500. Now they're back to seven games above 500. 500 basically means how many games ahead of are you from being even. So since the Diamondbacks would have to go on a seven-game losing streak to fall back to being a 500 team, you say that they're seven games above 500 at 69 and 62. So the standings look great. Standings look great for the Diamondbacks. Now you're going after those Cubs, and what did I tell you? Coming up in a week and a half, they'll have 7 of 11 games will be against the Cubs in a massive stretch. And then when that stretch is over, two games against the Giants. But looking a lot better, and I think it's on the shoulders of the starting pitching staff, because do you trust this bullpen? I don't. I don't trust the bullpen. You've got to get Davies and Merrill Kelly pitching deep into the seventh inning, if not the eighth inning every game. And you have to have Davies and Ciccone get you into the sixth inning every game. That's asking a lot. That's asking an awful lot, and hopefully they can do it. And then you're relying on another rookie in Brandon Pfaadt, who was
terrible at the beginning of the season, is pitching light years better over his last three starts, but you can't have him have a rookie hiccup. So you've got two rookies and an injured guy that used to be terrible in Zach Davies as the back end of your rotation. And while that's going on, no slip-ups from Zach Gallen or Merrill Kelly. All right, coming up next, I'd spend some time talking a lot of ASU because we talked specifically in Doug's Big One about the horrific decisions that are being made by that athletic department. But now, how does it affect the team and how does Kenny Dillingham feel about it? That's next. This is Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass.
It's big, it's juicy, it's meaty. Get your burrito at Burrito Express. If you're having a hangover, a bad day, even a good day, still get your burrito at Burrito Express. It will make you feel better.
Burrito Express started with my father about 25 years ago. He got laid off and decided that he needed to do something to provide for his family. My brother and I were older teens, 17, 18 year old, and I'm going to do a trial out of my house. So literally we decided we're going to start out of his house. So we delivered menus in a square mile area, literally started delivering burritos out of our home in Mesa, Arizona. And after about a month, he said, let's do this. Went and found his first location. And believe it or not, that's how it started. We started with one location back in 1995. Now we're where we are now.
I hope we find somebody that's willing to fight for those kids at Arizona State. It's really easy when for people to think of the quote-unquote pampered athlete and think that because players get this, they get the trainers, they get the strength coaches, they get the meals, they get the nutrition, they get all of these amazing advantages. But it's a fair trade. They've earned that. It's the school that's put this much importance on football. If you don't blame the athletes, like if you have a problem with the way that intercollegiate athletics are going, blame the adults. Don't blame the kids. And what is just so sickening about this is really the lack of institutional control. That's the best phrase that you can put this. The lack of institutional control. It is so easy to understand how this is supposed to happen. The way it's supposed to go is when there's cheating, you then do an exhaustive investigative study yourself. Then you turn in the information, and then you self-impose the sanctions. And Arizona State had that opportunity all throughout 2022, and they didn't do it. And I cannot explain to you the level of either A, ignorance, or B, arrogance, or C, both, at how Arizona State has handled this. For them to now give a bowl ban 4 days away from your first game, it's really one of the most gutless decisions I've ever seen in college athletics. Really, ever. No one is fighting for those kids. And it's almost on principle. I mean, in today's day and age of the empowered athlete, what would the school do if every player decided, I'm not playing? I'm not playing. You did this to me. I don't have anything to do with your cheating. You can't take this from me. I'm not playing. I mean, that would be... I would so support those kids if they decided to walk out. And I hate saying that because I love Kenny Dillingham. I really believe in this young man is going to turn it around. And the idea that he gets this thrown at him at this moment, I mean, any type of leadership could have said this at the beginning. I'm sorry, I'm struggling to talk. I'm just overwhelmed with rage for these people athletically for what they've done. Because I can't explain to you the level of ignorance it takes to get to where they are. And
When Tennessee got hit with their sanctions recently, they were given an $8 million fine. Because what's happened in college sports is the NCAA has realized, why should we punish the kids of the next regime? That doesn't do us any good. Let's fine athletic departments. Therefore, maybe you can't afford certain administrators and they've got to go. And ASU knew Tennessee didn't get a bowl ban. ASU knew that that's not the norm of the new NCAA model. And knowing that, I guess out of fear of what the fine is going to be, threw all their kids under the bus. Said, in order for us to save money and not get as big of a fine as Tennessee did, let's self-impose a bowl ban. Last year, you fired the head coach because he lost to Eastern Michigan. And instead of admitting of the rampant cheating and saying, you know what, we need to look ourselves and be accountable, and we're going to give ourselves a bowl ban this year, and it doesn't matter what happens the rest of the year, and we're going to get ourselves cleaned up. How is this not a lack of institutional control? I have no idea. Well, then, Kenny Dillingham is supposed to go out and coach football this weekend. Just go out there and get the boys ready on game week. So he met with the media, unlike the athletic department. The athletic department did not meet with the media. They don't want to talk to the media. They don't want to answer questions. But they throw Kenny Dillingham, who has nothing to do with this, and the players, who have nothing to do with this, out there to talk to the media because they're too cowardice to talk to the media. Well, here is what Kenny Dillingham had to say about practice this weekend after the fact that, well, he knew it wasn't going to be good.
I knew today would be shitty. I mean, they receive horrible news on a Tuesday practice in the morning before we meet for special teams. So to think that 18 and 22-year-olds are going to go out and have a good Tuesday practice is absolutely delusional. But I think the guys battled. The guys did the best they could do.
This is funny. That's like the most downtrodden I've ever seen Kenny Dillingham. And he's still fighting it. He's still fighting the good fight. He's still fighting the battle. Kenny, I'm so glad you're here. It's just amazing. It's amazing that this group of people think that this is okay. That they accept what happened. I don't know how you could. We played this one earlier in the 4-minute offense. But just listening to this timeline, it totally amazes me. Coach Kenny Dillingham was asked, when did he find out about the bowl ban?
I was informed this morning at 6:30 a.m.
How did you find out?
I met with Ray Anderson and Gene Boyd.
So Gene Boyd's the assistant athletic director, Ray Anderson being the athletic director. I can't stress enough that Ray Anderson fired Todd Graham and then told us about this new college model that was going to be modeled after the NFL, in which he would be more like an NFL president. And then two other administrators, Scotty Graham and Gene Boyd, would be like the general managers. And then Herm Edwards would just be the coach. And then they would have a scouting department that works under Scotty Graham, that scouts the recruits, that then handles the recruiting, and then Herm Edwards can come in as closer, and Herm Edwards is more like a CEO of the program while other people do all kinds of things. When you dramatically change the model and it flames out so horribly, how does that man not get fired? Unless the idea is Dr. Crow's. And then I asked the Arizona Board of Regents, how is Dr. Crow not fired? I mean, how many millions of dollars does this athletic department get to go through before somebody says, you know what, you guys aren't good at your job? And now it's throw the rookie head coach out there in front of the media to have to talk about it. So you found out that Ray Anderson and Gene Boyd decided this. Basically, you're doing this to call off the dogs. You issue bowl bans to suck up to the NCAA so you think you get lesser of a penalty. I can't get over this one fact. You fired Herm Edwards because he lost to Eastern Michigan. How do we know that? You paid him $4 million. If you fire a head coach in college football with cause because they broke NCAA rules, you don't owe him anything. They fired him and paid him. Therefore, saying he doesn't have anything to do with the problems at Arizona State University of recruiting during COVID. Now, you could argue all day long. I'm not asking your political opinion on COVID, your political opinion on whether or not we should have shut down the economy in the state of Arizona and in our country, whether the mask mandate was successful or not successful. Should everybody, blah, blah, blah. Should we be for? I don't care. I'm not talking about any of that. Just understand this. The NCAA said you can have zero people on campus. Zero. And ASU kept doing it. That's what they did. So they broke the rules. Massively. Don't argue, well, this guy did it, and I know this school did that. I don't care. I don't care. ASU did it. Then tried to act like everything's okay. And it's not Herm Edwards' fault. Even though the NCAA has issued multiple judgments over the course of time, and they actually have it in the bylaws. There's a rule in the former NCAA rulebook that says the coach is responsible no matter what. I was arguing this same exact point every time somebody would try to defend Sean Miller. When I would go after Sean Miller, I would say, this is a joke. It doesn't matter whether you think he knew about it or not. The rules of the NCAA, whether you think they're fair or not, are the rules. I think it's a little crazy in the sense that if there's a scandal going on in the chemistry department, you don't always blame the dean of the chemistry department. But in college athletics, it is a rule that the coach is 100% responsible for what happens. Therefore, the way you define that is you create a culture where you know cheating is not acceptable. And when you create a culture where cheating is not acceptable, then normally people don't cheat. Do they still cheat sometimes? Yes. If you don't believe me, walk around ASU to anybody that's been there for 15 years and ask them a question. Ask them this question. Tell me about Herb Sendek and the rules. There is no way somebody was going to break the rules in that basketball program under Herb Sendek. That is creating a culture. I'm not discussing whether or not you think he's a great coach, terrible coach, brilliant man, whatever. I'm just talking about you can set a culture that says this doesn't happen on my watch. So by paying Herm Edwards $4 million to go away, that means you're firing him without cause, meaning he didn't violate the terms of his contract. He just lost. But now you're issuing a bowl ban. Now, really think about how illogical this is. You're saying a couple video staffers and a couple of assistants every now and then broke some rules. And it's so minor that we're going to pay the head coach to go away. Yet now we're going to go back and issue a bowl ban for this group of kids and this coaching staff. It is the height of hypocrisy, like nothing that we've ever seen. But Kenny Dillingham is such a good dude. He's putting it on the players, and he's saying to the players, we've got to overcome this because everybody else is rooting against us.
Be the very best we can be every day. I mean, what I just told the team is nobody cares about your circumstance. In reality, most people in life would rather see other people fail so they don't have to work hard and actually work hard enough to beat them. So everybody looks at this and like, oh, great, Arizona State's not going to be motivated anymore. That's a win. That's how the majority of the world thinks, because nobody wants to work hard to achieve success. They want to bring other people down lower than them, and they can do the exact same work ethic. So people are looking at us, and they're satisfied. They're singing for joy. They're excited because they think there's no way Arizona State football is going to be able to keep their mindset to compete. And that's the challenge is it's us versus us every day.
If you're an Arizona State fan, I don't know what you do right now. Because we have a president that's too gutless to do the right thing. and fire Ray Anderson. We have a board of regents that's too gutless to do the right thing and fire Dr. Crow. And we have a state government that's too gutless to not investigate and take this mess on and say, wait a minute, how are millions upon millions of dollars being spent? $4 million on Herm Edwards to go away and not be held accountable. And we're going to blame kids and take a bowl game away from them. Take their incentive. And we're going to show so little class and responsibility that we're going to do it. And we're going to tell them 5 days before the season starts so they can't go anywhere. We're not going to do it last year at the end of that season. And we're not going to say it in this offseason. We're not going to say at the beginning, we've hired Kenny Dillingham, but we're also self-imposing a one-year bowl ban. The allegations and the investigation is showing that we need to be a lot more proactive about this than we have been. And we'd like to, you know, we believe in Kenny Dillingham. He's going to be able to overcome that. We've signed him to a contract that shows he's going to be able to overcome that. And we want players to come in right now and be part of a rebuild that reestablishes Arizona State football. But we want to be honest and transparent. It's the reason why I keep using the phrase arrogance and ignorance is because you're either so ignorant in your own investigation to know that you needed to do this, or you were so arrogant to think that you didn't need to do this. And now when you realize you're dead wrong, instead of accepting a fine like what Tennessee did, you say, no, we don't have to pay like Tennessee did. We're just going to throw all of our kids under the bus this year. Did you just come to this? I mean, if you just came to this decision over the last week, then you're a bunch of ignorant fools who don't even know how the NCAA works. And if you came to this decision a long time ago and waited till now to announce it, you're pathetic. I mean, just amazing. I can see the steward on a ship yelling women and children first. But Ray Anderson has his seat on the rowboat, as long as he's all right. This is one. Kenny Dillingham, I'm just so impressed with you. Will you play the one for me, Jeff Weir production, that I was going to use on Doug's big one? Here is Coach saying something that, man, I wish anybody else from Ray Anderson on down believed this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm about the kids. Everything I do, I believe in the players. Everything we should do should be about helping the players be successful in life, helping the players do everything they want to do to be successful. So anything that has a negative effect on our players bothers me.
The reason why I have so much respect for Kenny Dillingham is he has the courage to stand up and say what needs to be said. But he's not like me just attacking people. I can't help it today because nobody else is tough enough in the media to say what needs to be said. And I just hope that today's show, I don't ask it to go viral for my benefit. I hope it goes viral for the kids. I hope somebody in our state government says this is wrong. And think about the position we're in as an Arizona State fan base. If there's anybody on earth that deserves a sellout, that deserves support, it's these kids. Imagine how horrible their week is. And they come into a jam-packed stadium Thursday night, And the crowd is louder than forever for them to say, thank you for sticking this thing out. We know you got screwed. That's what they deserve. And yet, where does that money go when you buy the ticket to Ray Anderson's athletic department? If there's ever a scenario in place that does not deserve any of your money, it's the Ray Anderson-led athletic department. So what do we do? I mean, it's like the toughest decision you've ever had to make as an ASU fan. Those kids deserve you. Ray Anderson doesn't. And Dr. Crow isn't courageous enough to do the right thing. I'm not going to call for something like this because this is too personal. Way too personal. But man, would I support a player walkout. I would. I mean, if I'm an ASU fan and those players decide not to play Thursday night, I would line the streets and cheer for them and hold a de facto parade. I would totally do that. And the players stand up and say, we are not playing until you reinstate our opportunity to go to a bowl game. If the NCAA takes it away, the NCAA takes it away. But the school should have done it the year before or the year before that.
And is that a possibility? Has someone talked about that or anything?
Well, since you self-imposed it and you wrote the letter, you can always write back and say, never mind. We're not imposing the bowl ban. Now, the NCAA, whenever they investigate, they're allowed to do it. But that might drag on. Like, they might not be done with this, and then they give you a 2024 bowl ban.
Yeah.
I just think bowl bans are dead. I don't think they're going to do bowl bans anymore. And because of that, I think ASU is doing this just to lower their own fine because they don't want to spend the money, because fining is the new way to do things. So they've got $4 million to give to Herm Edwards, but they don't have money to pay a fine. So here, let's throw the kids under the bus and take away a bowl game from them. And to hear Kenny say that it's about the kids, well, that's the exact opposite of what the athletic department is doing, is amazing. The kids, there's nothing that stops them from organizing themselves and saying, this isn't fair, we're not going to play. And that's how their voice would be heard. That's how their voice would be heard. But I don't want to, like, if they ask me, should I do that, I would never answer that question. Oh, by the way, Jeff Weir Production, I'm sorry that I don't know this. Are we done with breaks?
We are done with breaks.
Okay, good, yeah. Good. So I would not do that because I don't want to take, that would be just taking the opportunity from them to play. And enough people have taken something from them. But at the same time, what a very understandable statement. And the university has 3 days. Like, if they did it right now, the university would have 3 days to figure out, okay, we better listen to these young men. And we better start doing what's right for them. My respect level for Kenny Dillingham is at an all-time high. And I'm sure they don't care, but my respect level for Dr. Crow, the Arizona Board of Regents, and Ray Anderson is, I mean, they're human beings. And I respect them only to the amount that you should respect every piece of human life. And then it's as low as it can possibly go. It's time for
Versus
I hold in my hand Versus Vegas. And little frustrated with the coaching staff of the Ohio Bobcats that Steve McCollum just brought up, because I didn't think they'd win, but I thought San Diego State was so bad that Ohio would still be within 3 points. I was wrong. The San Diego State Aztecs win 20-13, in which the coaching staff of the Ohio Bobcats decided at the end of the first half to run a screen into a soft zone when all you had to do was run into the middle of the pile, kick the field goal, and you're up 9-3. Instead, they have a turnover. San Diego State marches down. So instead of a 9-3 lead at halftime and getting the ball to start the second half, instead, you're down 10-6. And any coach in the history of football knows there's no reason to be overly aggressive when you have the lead at the end of the half and you're getting the ball back. Kick the field goal, get your points, and then you have an opportunity to go down at the start of the second half and get another field goal. Or actually, God forbid we ever try this, actually score a touchdown. You're allowed to do that. Now you have you've added 10 points before San Diego State gets the ball back. Instead, we try a stupid play, turn it over, now we're trailing. And then in the second half, our defense doesn't stop San Diego State very well. And yet, on a 4th-and-1,
with 12 minutes to go and down by two possessions, we decide to kick. Now, if you don't know college football, it's very easy to eat clock in college football. Very easy. So we actually think, doing the math, we're going to be able to get a stop, get the ball back when we haven't scored a touchdown yet today, score a touchdown, and then turn around and score another touchdown without ever giving up any points. Or we could have just gone for a yard. Oh, my gosh. Bad coaching hurts. Now, everything else? Not bad. Got a little embarrassed by taking the Astros on to cover the run line. They didn't cover because they didn't win. Detroit won 4-1. But everything else, I got pretty good. Got lucky on Baltimore, Colorado. I said over 8.5, and it ended up as a 5-4 game. So I got 9 runs, and I got that right. I took the Diamondbacks and Reds on Friday night to go over 8.5. Both teams almost went over 8.5. The Diamondbacks won 10-8. And then I told you about this one. This is the one I stood on the table for, and I thought they really messed up the line. Hawaii has already said they're playing for Maui this year. And for some reason, Vandy was a 17.5-point favorite. Vandy, you have the motivation of Hawaii and the terrible football that gets played by Vandy. And yet you say, they're going to win by 17.5? I normally don't call out Vegas, but I did on Friday. And Vandy won by a touchdown, but not even close to covering. That was kind of an easy pick. So I got that one right. So I go 3-2 over the weekend, get 60% of my picks right. That moves me up to 952, 867, and 1 in the career of versus Vegas. Still below the 53% threshold, so we got to do better. Now, today, I found one game that I believe in the same way I did Hawaii and Vandy. Toronto was at home yesterday. Washington was in Miami. And they make the Nationals fly from Miami to Toronto. And then you go through customs when you do that. And take on the Blue Jays who were already there after that trip. No way. I got the Blue Jays -1.5 on the run line. I think that one's an easy one. Baltimore, I got them covering the run line against the White Sox. And I do this out of straight fear, my third game. Don't screw this up, Jeff, for your production. Don't screw this up. Colorado had to fly across the country to get home. Atlanta's already on the West Coast, and they're going to Colorado. So I'm going to take the Braves to cover the run line. Could you see that delay of time? Me trying to think of where I was going to point. The Braves covering. Now, the last time I picked the Braves, we can all blame Jeff Weir Production because I wasn't going to. And he goes, don't you like the Braves against the Mets? But I'm the one that looked at it. I'm the one that could have studied it longer. I could have said, you know what? I'm not prepared. I haven't looked at the matchup. I'm not going to do it. I said, no, good idea. $5 down the drain.
Your money on this one, I promise.
Oh, look at that. I mean, it's your money then.
I'll pay for it.
Oh, look at that. Look at that. So I like the Braves -1.5. So I got 3 teams, 1 on the road, 2 at home, but all to cover the run line. I got the Orioles, the Jays and Braves, all covering the run line in versus Vegas. Do you realize the big part of college football week 1 gets underway on Thursday night? Go Devils. Man, those kids deserve something positive. Really interesting debate there with Steve McCollum. What do you think about what's more supportive, going to the game or not going to the game? I'm not calling for a boycott. I just think that's unfair to people that actually do work hard. But I can't spend money on a Ray Anderson product. But I understand why you would say, I'm not going to abandon these kids. And I think that's a very fair point, too. I would love to see the kids say, you know what, we're not going to take it. I'd love to see the kids stand up for themselves. Because it's clearly in the state of Arizona. Your former coach isn't going to stand up for you. He took his $4 million, got his cushy job at his old network. It's clear your athletic director's not going to stand up for you. He just offered a bowl ban. It's clear your president's not going to stand up for you. He's the one that said, go ahead and stay throughout all this cheating, Mr. Athletic Director. Your Board of Regents aren't going to stand up for you. They haven't done anything to Dr. Crow. And the state of Arizona, the government of Arizona, who should be in charge of our state institutions, they haven't launched an investigation into how much money that ASU spent on the Pac-12 that was a burden, and how much money ASU has spent in removing Herm Edwards when they could have done it with cause and saved $4 million. So since there's no accountability, kids, you can't rely on the adults. That's the lesson you've learned as an Arizona State football player. Don't rely on adults, rely on yourself. You guys decide what's best for you. I'm not going to get in the way of that. You want to play? Man, God bless you. God bless you. But play for yourselves and play for all the other former players that have played for Arizona State. Play for them. Play for yourself. Because clearly you're not playing for the adults. Thanks to Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass, Bell's Nashville Kitchen, Rosati's, and Parker & Sons at Burrito Express. I'll see you tomorrow. The main event is up next. Man, I'm angry.